Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Greenlight Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is The First Serve, your home of tennis.
It is joy for Jordan Thompson in Los Cabos. A miraculous marathon week ends with him as an ATP singles champion for the first time in his career. Casper Ruud gave all, but just as he has all week, Jordan Thompson had a little bit extra. He's been on court in the singles for over 12 hours, but it's been worth it because he can finally call himself a champion.
Honestly, that's so richly deserved from Jordan Thompson. He has been so gritty this week, and I obviously just mentioned his result against Mickelson, where he was a set and 4-1 down 15-40. He thought he had his bags packed, he was ready to go home.
Well, that's how I took in my weekend. Bit of pink at Marvel Stadium on Saturday night, into a bit of Jordan Thompson on Sunday. So Pink said, let's get the party started. I think Tomo was tucked away after all that time on court, had to catch a flight to Acapulco. But his dad, who's going to join us very soon, the family had a couple of nice ales late yesterday to salute Jordan Thompson, a winner on the ATP Tour for the very first time. So I enjoyed my weekend. It's only the fourth concert I've ever been to. Pink, how good was she? I know all the talk was about Taylor Swift a week ago, rocking the MCG for three sold-out concerts. But Pink, I salute you. I think my job is easy when I look at stage performers and what they do. So she got me in a good mood, and Tomo got me in an even better mood come the end of yesterday, because I had tickets to go to the Gold Class cinemas, and timing never quite works with tennis, does it? And this was booked about a week ago, and I thought Tomo at one stage was going to go to three sets, and luckily won the second set tiebreaker, and I was able to multitask at watching tennis TV as the previews are on for the movie that I was going to see. So Jordan Thompson, well done. Everyone goes on their own journey, and it's been great that SEM programs today have talked about Jordan Thompson, who's really flown under the radar all his career. Not that he flew under the radar when I first saw him as an 18-year-old at the Australian Open wildcard playoff. Remember that event? There's a lot of people who want to see the wildcard playoff come back, so that a group of Australian players who aren't quite good enough to get direct entry have to fight for a spot rather than being handed a discretionary wildcard. I remember watching this young boy from New South Wales, and he was animated, hard on his sleeve. The Hewitt sort of traits, and he idolises Leighton Hewitt more than anyone, Jordan Thompson. And he has been loyal to Australia's Davis Cup team for as long as I can remember. He will put his hand up and play every single time. And this 18-year-old at the wildcard playoff, well, I think it was 2 years in a row, he played 2 5-set matches. I think he won it twice. And after every point, there was this massive roar, fist pumps, just all let out. All the emotion of being involved in a titanic tennis match where the momentum shifts back and forth. So you put a little asterisk next to Jordan and you say, well, I like the cut of his jib. He's competitive. He fights like, you know, every point's life and death. And that's all you want is a paying patron who goes along to watch a live sport. Or in our role here in the media where we're consumed by sport, we love it, we just want to walk away knowing that everyone's given everything, whether it be in a team sport or an individual sport. But it's taken this long, and people would say, well, why has it taken so long? But it just goes to show how tough the world of tennis is. You enter in as a junior into the pros, you've got no ranking, there are 2,000 players ranked, the margins are extremely small. And if I think back before yesterday in Los Cabos, he has had some fine victories across the journey. He beat Andy Murray at Queens, Indian Wells 12 months ago. He beat Stefano Tsitsipas. The last time I was at the Miami Open, he beat Grigor Dimitrov, played a great match on one of the outside courts. So he's always had the capability to beat very good players. But he was sort of sitting in that region of 40 to 70, where you're playing a combination of tour events and you're playing the challenges to maintain your ranking inside the top 100. But his game is absolutely elevated in the last 6 to 12 months, I would say. He's always been super fit. In fact, one of the men that I respect probably more than anyone in tennis, who we have many, many a discussion, he sent me this today and he said, super quick, durable, world-class ground strokes, in capital letters, respect. And someone else sent this to me. Now Nadal's loss in Brisbane doesn't look so bad for him. When he knocked off Rafa in the semi-finals of the Brisbane International earlier this year, and someone else said he just looks so solid, and he does. He's coming up in just a moment, and his dad Steve as well. There's plenty happening in the world of tennis. Jasmine Paolini. You know when you just can't see a name coming at all? And there's many on the tour. You just can't quite forecast the trajectory of where they're going to end up. If someone told me that Jasmine Paolini from Italy was going to be the world number 14, I would have scoffed at them and said, you have got no idea what you're talking about. She's the world number 14 as of today. It is quite incredible. Coming up a little bit later on, apart from our good look at the Jordan Thompson match, Simon Alami, our Parents' Corner segment out of 9 o'clock. You'll remember we had his daughter Renee on the program about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and Simon is living the life of a tennis parent of an aspiring pro. So the parent is very much involved in the entire journey. Susie Grumley from the Traralgon Tennis Association, they're hosting 2 weeks of tennis, where Omar Jasika saluted again on the weekend after winning Bernie a few weeks ago. Omar trying to climb in the top 200. Candy Reeb, ATP WTA tennis commentator, who's in Acapulco as we speak, we'll have a chat to us. And Kim Clijsters and Andy Roddick have weighed into this whole Simona Halep debacle that is going on at the moment. So I'm going to bring you a bit of that from Andy's podcast, which is good to listen to. 1-300-736-736. You can jump on the Harcourts open line tonight. If you've got any thoughts about Jordan Thompson, how you've seen his career, let's pay tribute to him tonight. In fact, Duncan says off the temper text, 0433981116, Jordan Thompson taking home the Los Cabos Open after a shock straight sets victory over the world number 12, Casper Ruud, and his first ATP title. Next big match will be, of course, Indian Wells. Yeah, Acapulco this week, Duncan. I'll go through the draw of where he's playing and who he's playing, and then, of course, into Indian Wells, where we're going to be for the next 3 weeks from next Monday, bringing the show from the Californian desert, my favourite stop on the world tour. Up until today, or last night, Jordan Thompson had played 754 matches in his career. So that's including everything, qualifying matches, ITF level, challenger level, all the way up to the ATP Tour. And it's taken match 755 to win his first ATP title. 456 wins, 299 losses. Now, this is how it worked. He finished extremely late. The other part of the day that a lot of people probably would have switched off and not known about is that as soon as they played their final, he and Casper Ruud, they then stepped out on the doubles court about half an hour later in a semi-final. So Jordan teaming up with Max Purcell. Didn't want to let Max down. He'd been waiting around. Delayed semi-final from the day before when Tomo beat Alexander Zverev in that semi that went nearly 4 hours. So the doubles was pushed back to the Sunday. They come out and win the semi, and then they won the final. I don't think I've ever seen that happen, where you win a singles title and a doubles title on the same day and play three matches on the same day. But he is as fit as anyone going around. In fact, the only person in his box this tournament is his fitness trainer. They've had a long relationship. Jordan has had a base, of course, over in the US for quite some time, and that's what he really prides himself on. Now, Jordan Thompson was able to give me a little window earlier today. So he got to bed about 4:30 in the morning. He had an 8:30 flight to get to Acapulco in time. He touched down. I messaged and I said, Jordy, have you just got a couple of minutes before you hit the pillow? And he was good enough to just reflect on his victory yesterday. Jordan, a big congratulations on the week and winning your first ATP title. A great reward for a lot of hard work. Just describe to us the feeling to get your first title and the week to defeat Mickelson, where you were down and out, then to beat Zverev and Ruud, a couple of Grand Slam finalists, makes it even more special, I imagine.
Thanks, Brett. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I put a lot of hard work in, always have, and it's great to see that I got a reward for it. But not only that, it's the way I went about playing my tennis. You know, it was extremely slow conditions and played, you know, nearly every match at night time. So yeah, it was a long but a tough week, but a great week. You know, I never thought I'd be lifting an ATP title. Proud of myself, and hopefully, you know, I can keep going with this form. You know, especially in the last few matches that I played. I mean, I really turned around the match against Mickelson. Really should have probably lost that 6-love, 6-1. But yeah, somehow managed to turn that around. Yeah, I still don't know how I did it. And then yeah, to beat Zverev and Casper. You know, back to back nights. You know, after playing Sasha for 3 hours and 40 minutes, and then coming out and, you know, backing it up on not much sleep. You know, I don't think anyone will question my competitiveness or fitness. It gives me a lot of confidence that I know I can rely on my body and my mental strength.
The day itself, to also back up and play two more matches to secure the doubles title as well, a huge effort. Was that always the plan, to see the whole day out, win or lose?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly tough to play a singles final and then, you know, go straight back out there after just a shower. And, you know, I don't think I even ate any food. Might have been like a 20 to 30 minute break between both those doubles matches. So yeah, it was a massive night for me. But you know, playing with Maxi, you know, I always put my hand up to do that. He's one of the best doubles players in the world, so whenever he wants to play, I feel like we have a legitimate shot at winning the title, and we did that. And it couldn't have been under tougher circumstances for me. I mean, by the end of that last match, my legs didn't want to go anymore. You know, I spent exactly 5 hours on court, and that's not including all the warm-ups and stuff. So I was on court longer than I slept.
Your game's in great nick. I mean, you've always been a great competitor, had a great IQ on the court. What in particular has seen you elevate your game even higher now?
I think lately, you know, with my new coach, Marinko, you know, we've been working together for just over a year now. And, you know, people have actually come up and said that, you know, I'm playing much better, and, you know, just looking like I enjoy my tennis a lot more now. And, you know, there's a certain way I go about it. So I just want to keep that up and keep enjoying it, see where that can take me.
Jordan Thompson, a little earlier today in Acapulco, he just arrived. Had his head on the pillow. He was good enough to give us a few minutes. We'll catch up with him at greater length in Indian Wells over the next week. And just a great reward for a lot of hard work. We're here thanks to Green Life Group, elevating your game on premium sports services. You might want to weigh in on Jordan Thompson, 1-300-736-736, 0433-981116 on the text. So beats Escobedo, the Mexican, in the opening round. Emilio Nava, the American, 7-6-6-3 in round two. Yeah, the Mickelson result was incredible. Now, Alex Mickelson, we've talked a lot about him on this program. He is following in the footsteps of Ben Shelton. Knocked over Alex de Minaur in the opening round, who'd come off making that final in Rotterdam. So he's gone from Rotterdam all the way to Los Cabos, and probably a fair bit of fatigue there for Alex. But Mickelson is certainly the real deal. I mean, extraordinary. 6-love, 4-1, 15-40. 9 out of 10 don't come back from that. But Jordan Thompson has an incredible ability just to play every point on its merits. He just fights and he stays in the zone. Love 6-7-6-7-5. Incredible. The match against Alexander Zverev. I heard Jared Healy on Sports Day just preceding my stint tonight talk about Zverev being one of the most fascinating players on the planet. Oh, I agree. I mean, he was the leading player of that next generation. And he'd won everything, ATP finals, Olympics, Masters 1000s, but he just hadn't been able to break through. He made that one Grand Slam final against Dominic Thiem at the US Open back in 2020, and then got the horrific Achilles injury and that semi-final loss to Rafael Nadal at the French Open. It's taking him quite a bit of time to, you know, get his mojo back, but he's certainly back inside the top 10. And on paper, you know, 9 times out of 10, he probably beats Jordan Thompson. But Tomo's now got the confidence, a bit like Alex de Minaur, that we can beat these guys. They're not unbeatable. If we can just make them play a lot of balls, if we can just frustrate them, these guys like to stand and deliver. The big servers, the big, you know, serve forehand combination, and Thompson is just a player who's annoying, to be quite frank, because he can hit so many different type of balls. Tomo gets, you know, great angle, can you certainly serve is beefed up, and that's what you need. You need some free points. The Demon Orr serve is getting better if you're going to compete with these guys. So 13-5 this year. The significance on the ATP Tour, I talked about the overall win-loss. There's only one year he's been above the ledger. That was 2019 when he went 26-22 win-loss on the tour at ATP level. He's 13-5, so he is set for his best year. Hopefully, the curve keeps going up for Jordan Thompson. A few other talking points from this tournament in Los Cabos. Some better news for Thanasi Kokkinakis, who has had a stinker of a year, to be totally frank. But he went into Los Cabos searching for form. He beat Jack Draper in the opening round, the big Brit. Then he beat Dan Evans, fellow Brit, in the second round, and went down to Zverev in the quarterfinals 3 and 4. But good to see Thanasi get a couple of wins. Demon Orr crashing out of Dubai in the first round, crashed out to Mickelson. We'll give him a week off, Alex. He's been so good. You just can't be up and winning every single week. Max Purcell's the interesting one for me at the moment. I mean, he's defending a lot of points through this February period because he won the three challenges in India last year, but he's now stepping up to the ATP Tour, and he certainly hasn't produced his best form in the month of February. So he's dropped 11 spots. He was in the 40s. He's down to 62 as of today. And, you know, beats Arnaldi, the Italian. The Aussies have got the wood over Arnaldi the last few hit-outs, then loses to Nuno Borges of Portugal, who's a much improved player, who had that really good run at the Australian Open at the start of the year. He's 56 in the world, so margin's really small there, but one that was certainly gettable for Max, who has just got to figure a few things out at the moment. But, you know, playing doubles with Jordan Thompson performed brilliantly. Rinki Hijikata had a really good first-round win against Kecmanovic, and then went down to Kovacevic, the American, who also beat Rinki today in qualifying for Acapulco, a match that went nearly 3 hours. So he'd want to not see him in the near future. But Rinky's going okay. I mean, he's 79 in the world. If you can just keep incrementally, you know, winning at least one or two matches at this ATP Tour level, it gets you into tournaments, and it comes down to matchups. And Alexander Vukic had a really tough time of it in Los Cabos. He broke, I think, a run of seven defeats against Pacheco, the Mexican wild card, in the opening round, then got obliterated by Stefanos Tsitsipas, 6-3, 6-love. And then, of course, Purcell and Thompson, as I mentioned, their third title together. They've all come abroad. Houston, Dallas, of course, a couple of weeks ago, and now Los Cabos, 7-6, 7-5 in the doubles final. 1-300-736-736. Chris in Rose Bay, up in beautiful Sydney, he's given us a call. Welcome, Chris.
Yeah, I just want to comment on Jordan Thompson and this performance. I think it's up there with some of the great tennis performances by Australians over the years. I cannot believe how he did that in the last three games. And then to win the doubles. And he was talking about how knackered he was, but my God, he will sleep the sleep of kings, because I think what he's done in the last 24 hours is extraordinary.
Yeah, I would love to a 15-minute chat with him today, and I was trying not to pressure him too much. I just said, hey, the Aussie tennis fans would love to hear your voice today. And he's never been one that has done a lot of media, doesn't overly enjoy the media. I mean, look at the presentation ceremony. I mean, you know, he was pretty pretty low-key. And that's Geordie. That's the way he goes about it. He lets his tennis do the talking. But Chris, he's as fit as anyone going around. He has put in so much work to build a body that is durable for the brutality of men's tennis, where your reaction time is so minimal.
I'm trying to think of somebody who's endured what he had to endure in the last three games to come out and win a tournament like that. Just the comeback in every game has just been extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, there probably are many. We're thinking about Jordan. There's a lot of tennis matches played in tournaments, and, you know, off the top of my head, I'm probably not going to recall other similar type performances. But, you know, we see, you know, lucky losers. We see qualifiers who come through playing, you know, two or three qualifying matches, going to win tournaments. They've played in the space of a week. They've played eight matches, which is you know, quite extraordinary, even though it's best of three, not best of five. But, yeah, hats off to Jordan Thompson. Thank you, Chris. A nice call. If you want to talk some Jordan Thompson, I'm sure he'd be happy to hear there's a bit of love for him back home here in Australia. 1-300-736-736. We'll come back after the break with his dad, Steve Thompson, well-known long-time coach in Sydney, who's been very much part of the journey. That is next on The First Serve.
Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Greenlight Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is The First Serve, your home of tennis.
No, I was going to say the old number. 1-300-736-736 on the Harcourts open line. 0433981116 on the temper text. Plenty coming in for Jordan Thompson. What a great result. I think Tomo changed his forehand last year, and it seems everything has turned around. So good to see him not beating himself. Congrats to him and his family. Great people. Thank you, Alex, off the text. I love Jordan's never say die approach. This is what it means to be an Aussie, not like some of the other clowns who have represented Australia. Not naming, of course, any names. Jordan Thompson is harder than a cat's head, the cat being Joel Selwood. He loves his West Tigers in the NRL, Jordan, being a Sydney sider. I think he was out over the summer catching up with the boys during pre-season training. And I'll tell you what, I reckon he'd go right at rugby league. He's tough. He doesn't mind a bit of confrontation and doesn't suffer fools too easily. Jordan Thompson. His dad, Steve, for those of you in the tennis fraternity, you would know Steve Thompson, longtime coach up in Sydney. He has been out on court the last few days. Was trying to grab a window with Steve because he's so dedicated to coaching him. When Jordan was playing across the last couple of days, he was on court coaching, checking scores, multitasking. I was lucky enough to meet Steve at the US Open going back a few years ago, and he talked glowingly about his son, but how tough the journey is. And he was involved certainly in the early days of the formative years of Jordan entering the sport, and then as he got better and obviously there was a chance to make it in the pros, he then handed him over to a number of coaches who have come and gone. Steve Thompson, I caught up with a pretty proud dad earlier today.
Thank you. Yeah, for sure. Unbelievable. All the hard work he's put in and to win a tournament and most probably nearly hitting 30. He most probably didn't think it was going to come, but eventually it's there.
And the way he did it this week and the calibre of player that he beat, it's something you'll never forget.
I honestly thought there was no chance. I was on court myself watching the scores and against Alex Mickelson when he was down 6-love, 4-1, 5-40. I just thought, oh, at least he's got a game, because it wasn't looking too good there for a long time.
Just give us your own perspective of Jordan's journey. I've been asked about it on SEN today, and I remember back to, you know, watching him at wildcard playoff all those years ago, and he was obviously an emerging young player, and he played with so much passion and, you know, won a couple of five-set matches, and he was pretty animated, wore his heart on his sleeve, and I jotted his name down. I thought, well, gee, he's got all the competitive traits that you need if you're going to make it in professional tennis, but It's been a huge ride, hasn't it? It's not an easy sport to make it. It's extremely competitive. It's global. A lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice, particularly for the Aussie players to spend the amount of time away from home. Can you sort of give us your own summary of, you know, the journey?
Yeah, look, for sure. Going back to those days, I think that's where he sort of come from nowhere at 19 and won the, or not from nowhere, but definitely wasn't favourite to win the wildcard playoff. And you know, going away and playing all those tournaments, like, it looks glamorous, but he's missed a lot of things with his friends, you know, parties, just the sacrifices he's done, and on his own body as well, like always the training. You know, it's not just out on the court playing. You've got cool down, fitness. There's so many factors that go into it. It is very time-consuming as well.
What do you think's elevated? Because he's always had, if I go all the way back, Steve, he's always had a great brain out on the tennis court. He's always been durable. I mean, you obviously need that self-belief and you get those sort of breakthrough wins against better players, which, you know, certainly builds that. He's always been a tough player to play against, but what have you depicted or what have you noticed or what intelligence can you give us as to how he's sort of been able to elevate to the next level? Is it just simply experience and the more time he's been out there, he's got better?
Like, I think he's keeping his body right, and also I think Marinko's had a pretty good he's factored a few things into Jordan in his game. He's obviously coming in a little bit more and taking a few more risks. He never used to take, he wasn't the greatest risk taker out there. He seems to be doing that, maybe playing a few more slices, and definitely a different game that he's brought, and he believes in what he's doing and seems to be paying off.
He made the comment that he's probably enjoying his tennis more than at any time in his career. I mean, results obviously can, you know, dictate all of that sort of stuff. But I suppose when you've been on the tour for a long time, that it can wear you down. You've got to be able to do it with a smile on your face and actually enjoy this whole journey.
Absolutely. I think, like you said, he does wear his heart on his sleeve, and most probably haven't noticed that as much because he's most probably playing a bit better, so he's most probably not as frustrated. The competitiveness definitely comes out if it's not going well for him. But, even in practice, when he's been practicing at our club and that, he's definitely a lot happier on the court and seems to know what his job is and doing it. And, yeah, his body is good and staying, doing all the right things, the little things are the big things, and it's been very good for him.
I mean, you mentioned you're out on court. I mean, you know, coaching's been in your blood for a long, long time. What does sort of the Jordan story say to a lot of aspiring pros? Because I've made reference today that, you know, Millman won his first title around about the same age and played his best tennis probably in that 28 to 32 window. It took a lot of years of hard work to build it, his game, to a level where he could be successful inside the top 100. And, you know, Chris O'Connell's older and Vukic a little bit older. There's quite a few. I mean, the Demon's probably the exception where he's at for his age. But for a lot, and that's not just Aussies, but for a lot of players around the world, you know, the success comes later, doesn't it? That you've got to just put in the yards.
Noticing there's quite a few of the older, if you look at Gasquet, he's still 37, still playing. Monfils, I think, did well the other day. I suppose maybe if your body can stay right, and maybe the smartness around the court and being there for a long time, you eventually learn what's going on out there.
No doubt. Have the family sort of celebrate anything last night? Just people back here, or are you as sort of humble as your son, Steve? Because he is probably, yeah, he's fairly understated, isn't he? I mean, I'm sure behind the scenes he probably is letting out a bit more emotion, but it obviously means a lot to a lot of people who have been part of this whole journey.
Oh, look, we would have had a few drinks, as most probably the norm, crack a bottle of red, but it was, and more so during the match, I think, just to keep the nerves going.
Yeah.
He gets the first one, but I don't think he would have, I don't know how he celebrated. I think they were in bed at 3:30 and on a plane at 8, so wasn't much time for him and Tony, the fitness trainer, so they only took them there.
Well, thank you for just chatting to us. It's a great story. I've been an unabashed fan for a long time. We love the players that bring everything from the locker room out on the court, and he never leaves anything in the locker room, and that's all you can ask for is a patron, paying patron, to go along and watch a tennis match. So you should be pretty proud of your son. I'm sure you are, and hopefully there's more upside to come.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, very proud. He's always, even from a young age, he's been in very bad positions and always, you know, never gives up. Keep playing, and let's hope he can keep doing it for a few more years to come.
Steve Thompson, the father of Jordan, reflecting with me earlier today, and yeah, pretty proud of his son who, you know, entering a sport like tennis, it is enter at your own risk. And the parents are a huge part, because if they're not prepared to stump up some dollars in the early formative years, it's tough to actually have a chance of making it. The parents play a huge part. We'll chat to another parent of a 14-year-old aspiring pro, Simon Alami, out of 9 o'clock tonight. We're here thanks to Green Life Group. Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, you can trust Green Life Group to keep your sports grounds in top conditions. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. Back with more of The First Serve.
Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Green Life Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Thank you, Ed. 1-300-736-736 on the Harcourts Open line. You can jump on the temper text tonight, 04-33-98-11-16. Platform for you every week to talk and share your views on the world in tennis. We've been paying tribute to Jordan Thompson, the first half hour of the show, a winner on the ATP Tour for the very first time at the age of 29. He's in Acapulco as we speak. He'll play that tournament. He's got a qualifier in the first round, so he'll have a couple of days to settle in. And then, of course, Indian Wells, the next big event where we will be broadcasting from for the next 3 Mondays. In fact, I'm going to duck him to the San Diego Open this week, at WTA 500 on the way to the desert, where Darius Seville has qualified. I'll get on to your question, Steve, very shortly about women's tennis. I'll come back to that. Let's just wrap up the other men's results. The ATP 250 in Doha in Qatar over the weekend. Karen Khachanov, the number 2 seed. Well, he got the job done against a very impressive young Czech in Jakub Menšík. I'll talk about him in a moment, but here's Khachanov speaking after winning a 6th ATP Tour title.
Goodness, 14-12, first set tie break. Unreal stuff from you both tonight. How deep did you have to dig for this one?
I mean, to be honest, I thought yesterday was like 14-12. I mean, it was preparation for today, I guess. And today I couldn't believe that it was the same score, same tie break. He was serving incredible. I mean, me too. You know, final, these thoughts were in my head all the time, circulating, you know, but at the end of the day, I tried to stay calm, I tried to do what I can do, you know, and if he beat me, he beat me, you know, and I stayed strong, I'm extremely happy, extremely proud I could win this first set. Again, it lifted me a lot and gave me a lot of confidence, you know, to step up in the second.
This is your 6th title next to the Paris Masters. How special is this one?
Yeah, definitely. Every title is a special one, you know. Every time you want to win, every tournament you play, we play like around 22 tournaments per season, you know. And at the end of the day, you compete every week, you know. So for sure here in Doha, you know, this is one of the nicest trophies, and I think it would be a special one also.
Karin Khachanov, a winner in Doha, beating Jakub Menšík, 18-year-old from the Czech Republic. Can you think back to the junior final against Bruno Kuzahara, the young American? It was about 3 years ago. This match went forever. I was doing the on-court announcing on Rod Laver Arena, and I tell you, behind the scenes, they were frantic. They said, look, we're enjoying this boys' final. We need to get these guys off. We've got a women's final coming up. We've got all the pre-match ceremony and festivities to go through. Now, Menšík was taken off court in a wheelchair. He got a full body cramp. He couldn't even come out for the presentation. So he's a name that you couldn't forget. He didn't win the final that day, but you thought he's going to be something. So in this match against Khachanov, he served 16 aces. He's gone up 29 spots. He's 18. He's already inside the top 100 at 87 in the world. So inside the top 100 for the very first time. He was 167 at the start of this year. For those of you that went to the Canberra International to start the Aussie summer, he was runner-up. He qualified for the Australian Open, got a win against Denis Shapovalov in the first round, made the semi-final in Bahrain of a challenger and runner-up at the 250 in Doha. He's got some presence out on court. He knocked over the top seed Andrei Rublev on the way to that final. Brilliant performance. And the other talking point from the week from an Aussie perspective is Alexei Poprin. So his first tournament since the AO, made the semis. A good win against Alexander Bublik, who'd been in good form to start the year, and went down in a tight first set tiebreak that Khachanov just referenced a couple of moments ago, 7-6, 14 points to 12, and then lost the second set 6-2. Poprin, but he's at 38 in the world, and I was asked over the weekend, who's got the most upside of all this group of Australians behind Alex Diemen? All of a sudden, Jordan Thompson's risen to be our number two Aussie and gone ahead of Purcell and Poprin, who longer term and being a little bit younger had probably got some real upside to eventually overtake Tomo. But yeah, I'm sort of torn between Poprin and Purcell. For me, it's Max, but Max, I just think, has probably tried to play a little bit too clever in February. We know that his brand of tennis is not conventional, and he likes to play every different shot in the book. Sometimes I think you've got to just maybe put a few of those away at certain times, but he is learning all about life on the ATP Tour against these very seasoned players, and Popperin has just got that easy power. So it'll be interesting. But for Khachanov, 5-1 in finals, so he's tough to beat in a final. He's gone up 2 spots to 15 in the world and did not drop a set all week. Jamie Murray and Michael Venus took out the doubles. For the men, Mexico, Acapulco this week. Alex Demonor to take on Taro Daniel of Japan. Max Purcell to take on Francis Tiafoe. So that's a tough first round. And Jordan Thompson will have a qualifier. Unfortunately, Rinki Hijikata bundled out in 3 sets in qualies a little bit earlier today. Purcell and Thompson to back up from winning Los Cabos to play in the doubles. Rinki Hijikata to play with Joe Salisbury, which is a combination we haven't seen. And John Pierce to play with Heli Avara, the Finnish player. They've been playing quite a bit over the last year or so. And the tour is also in Dubai, the ATP 500. So Chris O'Connell to take on one of the great names, Maximilian Martelier of Germany, the qualifier. And Alexei Poprin, he's going to play Karin Khachanov. Semi-final, one tournament. They play each other in the first round of the next tournament. That's just the way the balls come out sometime. And never forgetting Dwayne Russell, I'll just have to borrow a segment from your show, Lost in the Wash. This might have just not caught everyone's attention last week. Matthew Ebden of Australia, officially with the rankings today, is the number one doubles player in the world. We know that he and Rohan Bopanna won the Australian Open. Bopanna just edging out Matt to be the number one player at 43 years of age. Well, now Matt's just overtaken him. They're playing their first tournament since the AO in Dubai this week, the 500. But well done to Matt Ebden. What a rise it's been after giving away his singles career and deciding just to focus on the doubles. Before we head to the break, Jasmine Paolini. I talked about her at the start of the show. Knock me down. 14 in the world. Her biggest title, the WTA 1000 in Dubai.
Never give up. Jasmine Paolini is the champion in Dubai. Back from the brink. Two players who have given everything in an extraordinary week. But it's the Italian, the 28-year-old unseeded player who wins the biggest title of her career. An extraordinary final, an extraordinary champion, Jasmine Paolini. Enjoy this moment. What a special achievement. What a result. What a turnaround in that final set. Beating Alla Kalinskaya 4-6, 7-5, 7-5 to be crowned the champion in Dubai.
Jasmine, congratulations. Your first WTA 1000 title. What does this mean to you?
It's so special. I'm really happy. Okay. It was a really tough match. She's playing unbelievable. She played an unbelievable week. And yeah, I'm really happy how to manage to come back. You know, it was really tough. I tried to stay focused every point to believe it. It went well. So yeah, I'm really proud of myself.
Kept responding to everything, if you were a breakdown to all the hard hitting, it was quite amazing. But are you surprised at everything you've done this week?
I'm really surprised. Yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm just, you know, happy and happy out I believe to win every match. And it was tough because I remember the first match I was set and break down, and I came back and everything changed. I could lost first round and I'm here winning the title. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
And what about the energy that you've picked up from this crowd over the week?
Oh, you are crazy, guys. Thank you very much for supporting me. Italian fans, and I'm really happy, proud of them. And yeah, it was a special week. I would like also to thank, of course, my coach, my fitness coach who is at home, the Italian Tennis Federation, who gave me support with the physio, you know.
You need the physio more than anyone on the tour. So if the federation's going to supply one thing, it's the physio's got to be right up there. Tough 3-set win against Anna Kalinskaya. What a year she's having. Beat Krejcikova in Adelaide. And I didn't mind her tennis up in Brisbane. Goes on to make the quarterfinals of the Australian Open. She was 80 in the world. She's 24 today. She's had an incredible start to the year. So two players in the final that we couldn't have predicted. But Paolini, second career title. She said she's been inspired by Jannik Sinner and really spoken about the profound influence of Italy's golden generation of women. Flavia Panetta, Francesca Schiavone, Roberta Vinci, Sara Errani, who to this day remains her role model and biggest influence. So what a win to get to 14 in the world. She was 30 at the start of the year. And Kellen Skye, she beat Ostapenko, Goff, Iga Swiatek on the way through. So the margins are particularly small in the world of tennis. And just before we head to the break, Storm Hunter, Katerina Siniakova, taking out the women's doubles title. Good combination at this pair. And Storm trying to climb back up to number one where she was. They defeated the Aussie Ellen Perez and Nicole Melica Martinez, who are now 1-10 in finals. They just cannot win the silverware they're after. They're making a lot of finals, but tough to beat Hunter and Siniakova. A quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the first hour.
Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Greenlight Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Quick segment here before our second hour at 9 o'clock. We're going to be joined by Simon Alami, of course, our Parents' Corner segment. Susie Grumley from the Traralgon Tennis Association, hosting a couple of big weeks on the Australian Pro Tour. Candy Reid, tennis commentator who's in Acapulco. Kim Clijsters and Andy Roddick weighing into Simona Halep. A couple off the text. Brett Awesome by JT. My question is, where are we at with the Aussie female tennis going forward? Thank you, Steve, for your text. Well, probably our brightest prospect, young Taylor Preston, 18 years of age. I watched that full final in Mexico today, the WTA 125. Now, she was 7-5, 2-love up in that final and got overrun by the lucky loser, if you don't mind, McCartney Kessler. One of the great names if she makes it. 1 hour and 50. She's 24, was the top seed in qualifying. Actually got knocked out, got a second chance when she received the lucky loser spot after the injury withdrawal of Amanda Anisimova, then goes on to win the whole tournament. These things happen in tennis. It is remarkable. But Preston started beautifully and she really faded, but we're not putting any great pressure. I mean, she's already at 151 in the world at 18 years of age, and she is going to have a very good career. Where she lands, we're not 100% sure. Steve, I might continue answering that after the break, because when I look at the rankings today, obviously Arena Rodionova has slipped out of the top 100. She was in briefly at 102. Storm Hunter at 121. Darius Seville at 137, who's qualified for San Diego this week. Astra Sharma at 138. Gadecki at 139. And Taylor Preston, the youngest of that batch of players at 18, at 151. So she's got enormous upside. A lot of the players I've mentioned have been around for quite some time and really haven't been able to elevate their game to be permanent top 100 players. Stick around the second hour. Check out our website, thefirstserve.com.au anytime. Follow us on our socials, Facebook, Insta, Twitter, TikTok, whatever takes your fancy.
Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Greenlight Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Hour number two on this Monday night. Happy to take your calls. Harcourt's open line 1300 736 736 on the 40 Winks temper text tonight. You can fire those through 0433 98 1116. Brett Phillips in the chair. You can follow us all week at thefirstserve.com.au. Our team of writers certainly punching out some great content, and we're following the Aussies on a weekly basis on all our social channels. So however you taking your socials, we've got it there for you on a day-to-day basis with the Aussies plying their trade all around the world. I did forget to leave out in the first hour Sebastian Baez, if you don't mind, the Rio Open, an event I'd love to get to, where Carlos Alcaraz was certainly one of the stories of the week, having to retire, having rolled his ankle in that opening round. He's supposed to be playing Rafael Nadal in Las Vegas this coming Sunday in an exhibition before trying to defend his Indian Wells title. So more news on that throughout the week. But Baez, his maiden 500 victory, biggest title of his career. fourth ATP title. The previous three have been at 250 level. 6-2, 6-1 up against the qualifier, Mariana Navoni from Argentina, who was the absolute surprise packet entering the tournament, had never won a match on the ATP World Tour. The Brazilian crowd absolutely loved him. He's gone up 53 spots to 60 in the world. And the other talking point from this tournament during the week was young João Fonseca, the Brazilian wildcard, 17, won the US Open Juniors last year, had a great run to make it through to the quarterfinals, jumping up 312 spots to 343 in the world. So that's where I like the wild cards being given out, not for the majors, but certainly for tour events where you get to actually play in the city where you were born. Rio, the crowd got behind him. It was a phenomenal atmosphere. In fact, Andy Murray put out, I'm still going to say tweet, a little X statement during the week. Andy said, unpopular opinion, South America should have its own dedicated swing on the tennis tour with its own Masters Series. The way the fans support the tournaments there is incredible, amazing atmospheres, and is clearly part of their sporting culture. Vamos. ATP Tour. Trying to call them to arms to maybe give South America a little bit more prominence. We've had Cordoba, Buenos Aires, Rio, Santiago in Chile this week, for the ATP 250. Do they deserve a Masters event or a big prominent event? You can weigh in on that, 0433981116 on the temper text. But the atmosphere that comes through from the South American tournaments is electric. Remember when Chile played Peru a few weeks ago? We played that sound from the Davis Cup. It was like being at a World Cup football match. It was something else. And Steve, just to tidy up on our women, look, we've got a lot just outside the top 100, and I'm not convinced at all that any of them can get in, if I'm being brutally honest. But Taylor Preston is a young player that we're hanging our hopes on. Talia Gibson, another product from WA, is a really good talent. Then we're going down to Emerson Jones. You say young Maya Joint, of course, who won Bernie, but she's in the 300. So a lot of them are long-term prospects, but Taylor's the one who's making rapid progress. And I just wanted to quickly acknowledge Troy off the temper text. Brett, let's not forget Leighton Hewitt's influence, faith, and instilling that never say die attitude in the Davis Cup with Jordan Thompson. Absolutely, Troy. These two are tight. He idolises Leighton. Remember when Leighton was playing still some doubles? He was sort of coming out of retirement and still playing some doubles late in his career. He was playing with Jordan Thompson, and they have formed a great union, and he's been very much an integral part of the Thompson journey. It is a journey for players, and they need a supportive parent or parents to be with them in the trenches. So we wanted to have our little parents' corner segment tonight. A few weeks ago, we had young Renee Alami, 14 years of age. She won one of the ITF events, junior events up in Brisbane. She's an emerging prospect, and her dad, Simon, is along for the whole journey. Simon, it's great to have you on the First Serve.
Thanks for having us, Brett.
Appreciate your patience waiting there. It is a journey, isn't it, for parents? You know, I had Steve Thompson, Jordan's father, on in the first hour, who's been there for the entire ride. You're very much, you know, central. He's got a tennis coaching background until he handed his son over, but you're still very much part of it as a supportive parent, and it changes as obviously your child is getting older. But right now, living the life of a parent of a 14-year-old who aspires to, you know, climb this tennis ladder, what is that like?
What is it like? Firstly, with Steve Thompson, I was on the phone with him today because he's actually Renee's private coach.
There you go.
He's taught me everything he knows, so I'm like a mini Steve Thompson.
Very nice.
Now, look, the journey, it's like a lot of friends ask, oh, mate, I'm going to get my kids into tennis. We muck around and say, don't do it. It becomes a full-time job, especially if they get to this level. So I'm lucky enough to work early mornings and late nights, so I'm free during the day. But, yeah, it's one hell of a ride. It's a fun ride. You get to hang out with your kids. But, yeah, there's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of ups and downs.
I think I made the reference, Simon, in the first hour, and I've used this sort of phrase before, but tennis is it's a bit of an enter-at-your-own-risk sport, isn't it? I mean, you talk about, you know, business, and it is like starting your own business. You've got to come up with some funds to get the whole thing up and running. And obviously, you know, those who've got talent in Australia get supported by Tennis Australia as well. And then some sponsors start to come on board. who get right behind some emerging talent, but the parents are very much part of that sort of funding journey to get it all rolling.
Funny you say that. I tell my kids, you guys are lucky. You're professional tennis players as we speak, because you don't pay for nothing. We pay for everything, and you do it full time. But like I said, when you said with the funding and whatnot, that helps with TA. But once your kid, if they're good or if they're winning matches, you're stuck. Whether you've got money or you don't have money, you're going to find a way to make it happen, especially if they're half decent.
And just the balance as a parent when your child has got some great ability, and then you're very conscious of your child also finishing schooling and making sure there's, a bit of a plan B or having that education behind. And obviously there's, the chance to go into college when, some of the players get older, up around sort of 17, 18, 19. But in Renee's case, obviously, trying to combine all this training with schooling and, also travelling and being out of the country, trying to gel that together, I imagine, is not totally easy.
Yeah, like you said, it isn't easy. That's why, we made the decision a few years back where we took them out of school, because I sort of looked at the grades of school. They weren't going to be doctors or surgeons. So we said, we give tennis a crack, but they still do school, and it helps so much with their travelling because they can just take it with them. It is a juggling act, and I know with Renee, she's really thorough. Sometimes she'll take a couple of days off tennis just to do her schooling, just to catch up. But yeah, to go down the elite pathway plus school, it's look, for them as well, it's pretty much a full-time job. It's pretty tough.
So you live and breathe the tennis landscape. You're out there, you're watching Renee train and practice in that sort of club environment. Obviously the tournament she's played, and I did see you up at the Clay Court Nationals in Canberra last year, where I was just an interested observer to observe the whole environment of how, the parents support their kids and the journey the kids go on to, form their own identity out on the tennis court. I mean, just give us an insight into the tennis environment that you experience and how beneficial it is here in Australia and where we can improve in that area as well.
But the only, like I said, I've had the opportunity to go overseas to Europe a few times to watch Renee. The Junior World Cup last year, I think, and I went to France to watch the Tarbes as well. Australia is a great place, awesome facilities that can play. The biggest thing we have that we struggle with is obviously in Europe, and you've probably heard this a million times, just the competition. You drive 6 hours one way in Europe, you're going through four or five countries, whereas we drive 6 hours out of Sydney to Coffs Harbour to play the same players we play in Sydney and Coffs Harbour. So that's the struggle, just the competition. So for her, she's lucky enough she went overseas at a young age where she gets to compete against these kids, where then she realises, hold on a sec, they're on sort of my level, they're normal people. Whereas if you don't get that exposure and you don't get out there and then you go overseas and you get dealt it a few times, the self-belief disappears. And I find that a big thing. So that's the only struggle with Australia. Everything's great to train in that, but we're that far away from everyone else, so we don't get that, world competition.
Yeah, I mean, that has been brought up a lot, our logistical challenges and then how vast this country is and the level of competition. So there are just some realities, aren't there, Simon? But is there anything that you think could be improved here, or could we make some tweaks that could maybe just up that competition here in Australia?
You know what? It was last year Renee got invited to a talents combine.
Yep.
Up in Brisbane, which was pretty cool. There was, I think, 16 of the best kids.
Mm.
And we're just saying, and a lot of kids maybe don't want to live away at a young age from home. So we were thinking as well, between parents and a couple of coaches we talked to, that if they could do that four, five, six times a year where they bring the best of the country into a training camp, bit of competition, for whether it's just a week, but I have to do it more often, maybe that can up the level.
Yeah, that got great reviews, didn't it? That camp in Brisbane, there were a lot of people who spoke glowingly of the benefits of the players in that week. I mean, ideally, Simon, what do you think your role as a parent is? I mean, I went and watched my twin nieces play basketball. They're only seven last Saturday morning. It's an interesting place. There's actually a sign on the wall that says, if you've got nothing good to say, then don't say anything at all. Obviously trying to give the kids a good environment just to learn and develop. But you would experience that parental sort of environment where it does race, doesn't it? There are more animated parents who outwardly express their emotions towards their kids and support them, and that can be in a good way, but there are those who just stay very, very low-key and just in the background and play their part. What ideally do you think is the role of the parent in junior tennis?
I've got to be a bit careful here because, like you said, you meet a lot of unique people in this sport. And, yeah, like I said, look, as a parent, what I try to do, me personally, is obviously support and love my kids, try to be a dad. Yes, yes, you're going to have that tennis brain because we've been around it for so long, for the last 10 years, so we sort of become tennis experts. But at the end of the day, you've got to sort of love and support and be there for them. And whether they win or lose, you've got to, like I said, be that someone to lean on kind of thing, because, like, it's pretty tough. Like, you're on your own, like you said, and if you lose a match, and no one likes losing. I don't like losing, but you just got to be there for them because this is a tough sport. It's just with Jordan you're talking about. He's played, what, 13, 14 years on the pro tour,
yeah,
and he wins his first ATP title, but he's been in the top 100 for 8 years.
Mm.
So that's how hard this sport is. So as a parent, we just got to be supportive and be there for them and whatever they need.
Yeah, so many ways to measure success. Obviously, you know, very few get to the absolute cream, the top echelon of the sport and winning majors. It's hard, isn't it? But if you walk away certainly winning more matches than you lose and bank more money than you're spending and you have a great life experience of travelling around the world, meeting so many people, I mean, there are just so many benefits. In fact, someone said to me last year that tennis players would make the best employees, Simon, because they've built this incredible resilience, you know, going around the world. Unless you're winning the tournament, you're losing every single week. Does that make a bit of sense to you?
It does. It does. Funny you say that. You know, I was speaking with Brad Jones.
Yep.
Quick shout out to Brad, my Emerson's dad, mm-hmm. at the Australian Open Juniors. And he goes, because obviously Emerson's been really successful. And he goes, you know what, Simon? He goes, a lot of small joys in this sport. He goes, you can go the season winning 70 matches, losing 20. Yes, successful season. He goes, but you only win 3 tournaments.
Yeah.
That means you're still losing every week.
Mm.
He goes, it's all small joys. Yeah, pretty tough. But like I said, and it's not for the faint-hearted, and only a special few make it.
Mate, great to pick your brain tonight. Let's do it again. Renee, I got to see her play in Canberra and watched a little bit of the ITF that she won up in Brisbane. It was great to chat to her a few weeks ago. It is a journey. She's 14, and who knows what lies ahead, but she seems pretty committed. She's going to give it one hell of a shot. So we'll see how it all transpires, but really appreciate some insights tonight.
You're a legend, Brett, and thank you for having us, and we'll chat soon.
Simon Alami, he is the father of Renee Alami, a developing prospect here in Australia. After the break, Susie Grumley is going to join us from the Traralgon Tennis Association. They're hosting a couple of big weeks of tennis. On the way to the break, would Elbo have sent Jordan a congratulatory message today, or is he staying away from tennis after he was booed at the Australian Open? Tell you what, he was getting the hips moving at Taylor Swift, Anthony Albanese, across the weekend. It might not have landed on his desk that Jordan Thompson won, but he does love his tennis. We might send him a note here from the first serve. We'll be back.
Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Greenlight Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is the First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back on this Monday night, 1-300-736-736-04-3398-1116. I'd ban players from bouncing the ball before serves. That would cut 35 minutes from 2-hour matches. Ban the bounce on the text. Well, we have said it the last few weeks. I think there probably should be a cap because Alexander Zverev, that was hard work, and we called that semi-final against Daniil Medvedev on the Friday night when he was bouncing the ball, I think Mark Woodford and I were keeping count, 17, 18 times at one stage in a 5-set match. A lot of field time on radio, let me tell you. We appreciated Daniil that night, just stepping up, bang, getting through his service games quickly. We miss Roger. He used to bounce the ball twice up into his service motion. We've been used to Rafa. We'll sort of cop it because he's such a champion. But it gets on our goat a bit with all the pre-stuff before launching into the serve. I'll get to one in the mailbag very soon that came through during the week. Longer form correspondents always love getting that during the week. The first serve, sen@gmail.com. You can send that through. Traralgon playing host to a couple of big weeks on the ITF calendar for the men and the women. It's been a regular stop on the Australian Pro Tour. Also, obviously, plays its part in the build-up to the Australian Open with the juniors. And is just a terrific setup. Has had a big renovation the last couple of years. Susie Grumley is the manager of the Traralgon Tennis Association. She's been good enough to join us because when I think of Traralgon, Susie, I think of you. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Brett. Thank you for having me.
You've been part of it for a long time. How many years?
17 years now. This May, it'll be 17 years. So, yeah, it's been a while. It's been great. Love it there.
And, you know, for you and your team, it's a huge couple of weeks. It's not just the 2 weeks, but it's the build-up and logistically putting everything together. You've got a terrific setup down at Traralgon. Obviously, I haven't been down since you've had the new decking, and I'd like to see if I can pop in. Well, it won't be this week because I'm off to Indian Wells tomorrow night, but certainly later on the year for the juniors and other events that you do have. But it has become a real permanent spot on the calendar here in Australia.
Yeah, look, it's been, you know, it's just proving to be a great couple of weeks. We've had wonderful weather, which is always an added bonus. But it's been a hectic couple of months. Of course, we had the ITF Junior event there in January, which is the lead-in tournament to the Australian Open Juniors. We had AO qualifying rounds there as well. And then a couple of weeks break, and we've headed straight into 2 weeks of Pro Tour. So it's been very hectic, but it's been great fun.
Omar Jasika saluting yesterday, won in Burnie. We had him on the show when he won Burnie and Tassie a few weeks ago. He's a good young man who we're hoping can climb into the top 200 this year. Too good for Lee Two in the final. I mean, some great names. Young James McCabe, who's going to be a potential star. Alex Bolt, you know, trying to find some of his best form. You've got a sprinkling of internationals as well. Just dealing with the players in Traralgon when they come down your way, Susie. What's that experience like? Because all those names that I mentioned, they're pretty decent young men.
They're great young men. And, you know, the likes of Luke Saville, those types of guys, Alex Bolt, they've been coming to, you know, to Traralgon for over 10 years, playing in the ITF juniors. And funnily enough, we were speaking to Omar this week about the juniors, and he actually came runner-up in the 2014 event, the junior event, and Alex Arev beat him, of all people. So that was 10 years ago this year, and that was an amazing final he played then. And he's a wonderful young man, and he's got lots of charisma, and we love having him at the club, and all those other guys too. You know, we're very fortunate to have seen so many of them come through the juniors. So it's just great to have them come back each year.
Yeah, people forget that, you know, places like Traralgon and Burnie and other stops around Australia, these are the stepping stones to, you know, you've got to start at that ITF level, build up to the challenges to work your way to the Pro Tour. You've got to put in the hard yards. You know, I mean, you mentioned Alexander Zverev's name there. I mean, the honour roll at Traralgon. What are a couple of the other names that sort of jump off the page in your time there who have gone on to do some extraordinary things in the sport, Susie?
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, you know, Roger Federer won the event in 98. Had Yuri Leka, he's been there. We've had lots of guys there that, you know, haven't, Joe Wilfred Tsonga. We've had a lot of guys and women that have played there that, you know, haven't won the event, but, you know, have gone on to do so many, many wonderful things too. Sasha Zverev, Nick Kyrgios, Marion Bartoli, you know, the list goes on and on. So, we feel, you know, so fortunate. You just, Mira Andreeva, she was a finalist last year in 2023.
Yep.
We had Coco Gauff there a few years ago, Leila Fernandez, you know, they didn't win the event, but obviously are now, you know, going so well.
And Susie, I mean, you've had challenges in the past that the events in this fortnight are at ITF level. I mean, we do a podcast called The Grind, where one of our co-hosts is Alexandra Osborne, who sits on the ITF Player Council, Advisory Council. And I think there's been a real push, obviously, for a lot of the ITF events to, you know, just in terms of looking after the players, which they all do a great job of, but I think there's been a more prominent focus on that from whether it's hospitality, accommodation, helping out in so many areas. Just give us a feel inside of Traralgon, the experience that you're trying to provide for the players when they come down your way.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a bit different. This tournament's a bit different to having a challenger, obviously. There's a lot more rules and regulations for the challenger. We provide a courtesy car for the players that, you know, we don't have to do for them, but we like to. We do that. We obviously have a canteen open every day, and that, you know, serves, you know, not just salad rolls and things, but pastas and bits and pieces. And, you know, we try and help them out as much as we can. We've been able to find, you know, housing for a lot of them. They find a lot of them love to stay in with a family for a couple of weeks. It helps them out. And the community is so receptive to, you know, all our events, and people love sort of playing a part in the tournament, whether it be volunteering or having a player come and stay. And, yeah, so it's really great. The community really embraces the players, and I think they enjoy that.
Brilliant. I hope to get back down there again, because you've done some great renovations. It does look good on the live stream, which is a regular occurrence, of course, whether you're watching ITFs or challenges. You can watch it for nothing. Or get courtside if you're listening in down Traralgon, Gippsland Way. Go and watch some great tennis. This is the next tier who are trying to go higher in the sport. Susie, really appreciate some insights and continued success. 17 years, and I feel like there's another 17 left in you. I feel like you've got some stamina in you.
Thank you, Brett. Thanks for having me.
She's probably saying, come on, Brett, you're feeding him 17 more. Thank you, Susie. You can do it. Come on. Susie Grumley, the manager down there at the Traralgon Tennis Association. Candy Reeb, she's a great commentator. She'll be my guest next here on The First Serve.
Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Greenlight Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back. Plenty to come in the next half hour. Thefirstserve.com.au. Check us out during the week. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. You get on any of those channels and you can follow The First Serve in the world of tennis. For those of you that are consuming a bit of tennis, whether it be through subscription TV, Tennis TV, WTA TV, beIN Sports, we'll talk more about all the rights and everything, and obviously the lack of coverage here in Australia on next week's program. But Candy Reid would be a voice in your ear that you'd be familiar with. She commentates a lot of matches. She's in Acapulco this week, a British tennis journalist who was a sports anchor for CNN International based in Atlanta going back. She played tennis herself, of course, back in the day, and I caught up with her earlier today, building up to a big week in Mexico.
Thanks, Brett. Well, for me, it's an absolute pleasure to be listening, because I think you know that I listen to the pod almost every Monday. So thank you for what you do for tennis. And yeah, I think we had the best spot in the house today. We were sitting on the beach in Acapulco interviewing some of the best tennis players in the world, which is a bit of a thrill for me. So it wasn't a bad day, I have to say.
For those listening into our show, they'd be very familiar with your voice. I mean, those who are consuming a lot of tennis through subscription services here in Australia, your voice is very, very familiar. How many matches, Candy, did you call last year?
Yeah, I do a lot, actually, and you're right. I think, actually, I love that. A lot of people talk about how long the tennis tour is, don't they? But I actually prefer it that way, because if they shorten the tennis tour, then we'd have less work and less tennis to watch. It'd be a great shame, I think, for all of us who feel really passionate about it. But I was actually told I did over 400 matches last year, which is a bit of a shock to me. So that's obviously the majors, of which I do, I think, three of the four, and then also WTA and ATP at all levels. So pretty much I'll do anything that anybody asks me. I just absolutely love tennis. I have a massive background in tennis. I started playing at the age of 8. My grandmother was actually a junior Wimbledon player, and I got to play junior Wimbledon a couple of times, which was just amazing. Then went off to university in America and played at the University of Tennessee, which I know is a big Australian hotspot, because Michael Fancutt was the Australian coach for a couple of years when I was there. So we had loads of Australian boys on the team. I don't think any Australian women when I was there at the time. So I've had experience with college tennis, and then went off to CNN to go and work as a sports presenter there for about 12 years on a global sports show called World Sport, where we got to cover everything, but they sort of gave me all the tennis assignments. So that was incredible. So I've been around sports essentially my entire life, but tennis has been my number one sport.
Magnificent. Yeah, you mentioned the University of Tennessee. I was up till about, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. this morning, Melbourne time, watching young Adam Walton, who was runner-up in the Challenger in Pune. But he's a great example of someone who's made a great transition from college to the pros very quickly. The state of the game, Candy, right now, I mean, obviously we've had an unbelievable era of Djokovic, Federer and Nadal. I mean, obviously we hope to see Rafa back playing this year. I mean, Djokovic has still got some time in the game to go. But, gee, the game's in pretty good nick. I mean, you talked about some of the names you sat beachside talking to today in Acapulco, including our very own Aussie number one, Alex de Minaur. Gee, a lot to like about the next sort of 10 to 15, 20 years of the rivalries that are certainly developing.
Yeah, it's always the way, isn't it? So we speak about when Sampras and Agassi left the game and what would happen then. Then we got some amazing players and it's just moved on beautifully. And there's so many exciting players. I think there's a raft of entertainers, different players, different characters, different ways they play. Alex de Minaur is an absolute treasure, isn't he? As you well know, top 10 player now. And the guy's so likeable. You just sit down and you can listen to him speak all day. We actually spoke about how many shoes he goes through on a hard court today. So that will be played. I'm not going to give the answer away, but as you can imagine, it is a lot. But he is so speedy. He's added a lot to his game. He's got this big serve. He's just a tremendous character as well. And we spoke to Taylor Fritz and Francis Tiafoe and Ben Shelton, who's just a diamond, isn't he? He's just got this massive smile. He's so personable for someone so young. Holger Rune was also there. He's had plenty of coaching changes. A lot is going on in Holger Rune's world, but it's always interesting. And of course, Stefanos Tsitsipas, who's just come from Los Cabos as well in Mexico and has a good history in Mexico as well. I mean, he is just, well, I think he's a Greek god, Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Just on Holger, back with Patrick, which is really interesting, isn't it? I mean, for those who have been following the second series of Breakpoint on Netflix, obviously there was quite a big focus on Holger and the coaching changes, and Mouratoglou was in the camp, then he was out, then he came back in, and now he's come back for a third stint. I mean, they have known each other for quite some time through Holger's development, you know, going to the academy. It's an interesting stage that he's at, trying to sort of solidify a team around him.
Yeah, there have been a lot of changes. We know that Lapo Beccarini, his fitness guy, I think is out now. His mum hasn't been seen on tour for a couple of weeks. That was something I think that struck out when I was watching Breakpoint. She was still making his bed. And I have a 16-year-old son, and I just hope that when he gets to 20, I'm not still making his bed. But these things happen. There's a lot of inconsistency in Holger Rune's world. And I hope that changes because he really brings a lot to the game, doesn't he? He's got this fiery personality, an amazing player. He's got all the shots. He's really entertaining to watch. He's a young guy. I don't know if you saw his interview that I did in Basel when he talked about hair for the air. And he was talking about not having his cap on because he wanted to give his hair some air. And he's a funny guy. So hopefully things have settled down. But it didn't last too long with Severin Luthi. Didn't last too long either with Boris Becker. Both of those guys have been out for a while now, and Patrick Mouratoglou is back in. So let's hope there's some consistency in Holger Rune as well, because he really is one of the bright hopes for the future, along with many others, including Yannick Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz. Tennis is in phenomenal shape. The only way is up, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no doubt. Candy Reid is joining us. She's at live in Acapulco, one of the regular voices you hear commentating tennis week to week around the globe. Just a bigger question around, obviously it's been floated about a possible premium tour concept. Craig Tiley quite prominent there in leading that space with Stacey Allister. Peter Johnston, a tournament director who looks after Zhuhai and was looking after Tel Aviv, Kuyong, the classic here in the lead-up to the Australian Open, was on our program a couple of weeks ago. And a man who travels the world, who is involved in these sort of 250-level events, and he thinks that this would really struggle to get off the ground. Have you just got a view on where all that sort of heads?
That's difficult. And I had to say, I heard that interview with Peter Johnston, and I would say that he should be a prime minister or president in any country. I would take and listen to it, whatever he said at all times. He's got such an authority, hasn't he? A great orator, a great speaker. And what a brain he has in tennis. And he seems to absolutely love the game as much as he ever did. It's going to be interesting because my brother is very much involved in the golf world. So I know awful a lot about LIV Tour. And of course, we've got the Saudis really interested now in tennis. We saw, actually, I was in Jeddah last year for the Next Gen, which was absolutely a phenomenal tournament. The courts at the Next Gen was brilliant, the speed of it, and the matches were so entertaining. One by Hamad Medjedovic, we saw Artur Fies, we saw Alex Mikkelsen, who actually lost all three group matches. And Alex Mikkelsen is just on a tear right now. He's beating players left, right and centre, including your guy, Alex de Minaur, last week in Cabos. So he's playing well. But I think the ATP Tour, the WTA Tour, needs to come together. Whether or not there's going to be a Premier Tour is something that I think we have to wait for. But we do know that I think the tours have to combine, the majors have to come together, and we have to have one cooperative tour all together working in the right direction. I think that's going to be imperative. And I think that's something that perhaps golf has just warned tennis about. Be ready, because a lot of money is going to come in, and money talks. We all know eventually you can say all the right things if you want to, but we all know where this game is heading. So I think just coming together and providing some collaboration is what we all need, whether or not there's a Premier Tour in our distance or future or not.
Yes, plenty in 2024 in the watch this space category, with tennis really setting up the calendar and the Saudi interest and how it's all going to look over the next 2 to 3 years. It's a fascinating space.
And I have to say, I interviewed the president of the Italian Tennis Federation at the Australian Open this year. And one of the things that struck out, because I was asking him why Italian tennis is so good, is it not just because of the future satellites and challenges they have? And actually, he said it's because they have a dedicated tennis channel for tennis. So at all levels, tennis is very relevant. He said it's becoming as popular now as football or soccer in the region. And that really stood out to me. I think more of that in every country, especially Great Britain and hopefully Australia too.
Yeah, it's a big talking point in Australia. We're going to keep on it here on the First Serve, because there are people who want to see tennis all the time, who follow it like we do. Candy, thank you. Enjoy Acapulco, and hopefully the Demon can fire up to defend his title.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me.
Candy Reid earlier today from Acapulco. It is a great tournament. There you go. Italy, full-time tennis channel. We're going to discuss rights. We're going to discuss scheduling on the program next week. I know it's the bane of many that Fox Sports doesn't show beIN anymore. You have to go through subscription services to get that, and Tennis TV, WTA TV. So I have had some discussions off air in the last week with Tennis Australia, Channel 9, and a couple of other outlets, and we'll continue to present and push that agenda over the next few weeks. We'll come back. Simona Halep, a couple of former stars of the sport, have weighed in.
Whether it's tennis, football or cricket, trust Greenlight Group to keep your sports grounds in top condition. Elevate your play at glgcorp.com. This is the First Serve, your home of tennis.
We mentioned Taylor Preston, the 18-year-old, a little earlier. She'll be in San Diego this week, taking along Magdalena Fritsch of Poland in the opening round. Darius Seville getting through qualifying today will take on Zhu Lin of China. Seville will play with Anna Blinkova in the doubles. Ellen Perry is Nicole Melika Martinez, trying to win their second title. They're 1-10. Tough going. Storm Hunter and Katerina Siniakova, who defeated them in the Middle East. So that quartet headed for San Diego. Austin, Texas, will have a couple of the Australian women this week. Olivia Gadecki, who got through qualifying, and also Irina Rodionova. And of course, Maya Joint, who won Bernie, will play in doubles. Gadecki will play in the doubles as well. I mentioned Adam Walton just in my chat there with Candy Reid. He's an impressive young man, University of Tennessee, quick transition to the pros. He's inside the top 150 for the first time. He won Bernie, second Challenger final of the year. He played in Pune in India last night. It was one hell of a battle, taking on Valentin Vacherot of Monaco, who's on an absolute tear at the moment, having won three challenges in a row, fourth seed, 3-6, 7-6, 7-6. So Walton just pipped, but he's going very nicely, presents well. He won the doubles with Tristan Skulkate. Finland's Otto Virtanen won the challenger in France, so he moves to 4-0 in challenger finals. He's up 41 to 131 in the world, 22 years of age. In fact, Emil Ruusuvuori and Jaakko Niemelän are the only other Finnish players to win four ATP titles before their 23rd birthday. So Otto going nicely. We need a few players to step up, certainly from Finland. Matteo Gigante of Italy took out the Tenerife Challenger, fourth ATP Challenger title. He's up 27 spots to 156. The Aussies are going to be in Delhi this week, this little Indian swing of tournaments. Skulkate, Sweeney, Tomic and Walton to play in the New Delhi Open. And, of course, the ITS will continue down in Traralgon. Don't know if you've caught Andy Roddick's new podcast, Served with Andy Roddick. John Wertheim from Sports Illustrated is with him. Our special guest this week was Kim Clijsters, as Andy Roddick and Kim Clijsters weigh into the Simona Halep saga. Let's take a listen.
Trying to appeal a suspension. John Wertheim in the last segment went through the timeline of positive tests, coaching changes, team changes, kind of this vortex that has gone on around Simona for the last 18 months. You know, some people are like, well, you know, it is what it is. You take what you take. And then, you know, some people require or want a little more nuance with the situation. She's now suing the supplement maker, and it's just been a mess for someone who was generally really liked and respected in the sport for a long time. I'm going to do the thing that annoys me when I'm on the other side of it and ask a very vague question, but what's your take on the situation? And, you know, are you upset about it, concerned about it? Are you mad that people don't have the patience to actually deal with it in nuance? What's your take
above.
On it?
All the above. I think, obviously, I was very surprised when you hear the news and you know, I don't know Simona very well, but I know her well enough, I think, to kind of have a little bit of a judgment that it's something that I do believe that she didn't take anything on purpose to put her career in a situation like it is today.
Sorry to interrupt, but it is a like she would be, and it's going to be, that's another whole conversation. She would have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, number one, like instant vote, no problem in. Right. And it's, you're basically asking the question, would I put that at risk, you know, at 30 years old?
I think to me, the biggest red flag is, you know, the team. Like, I have a hard time. And I get it. Like, I get that she took the supplements and she, you know, she has to be aware. Like, we've been in the situation where, you know, you get sick or you have to check everything. Like, I've had to, you know, anything that I had to or that a doctor prescribed, I had just checked with the, you know, with the WTA, with the doping committee. Like, is this clean? Can I get an approval? If you don't do that, there's always a risk that something could go wrong. But in a situation like this, and I'm so, like, for women especially, when you have coaches that take over your team where they, I mean, I call it manipulating, I don't find another word for it, taking control of everything that happens around an athlete, I do have a hard time with the fact that, you know, in this case, it's Patrick. He does a video, says, okay, this was, I think it was collagen or something, a collagen product that we had, or his team had proposed for her to take. And that she takes it without any hesitation, where you trust your team, where you trust the people around you, that they know that they're doing the right thing. And then that happens on such a, I have a really hard time that, you know, that there is no consequence for the team, for like that it's just the athlete. Yeah. When you trust your team.
He's kind of, and we're talking about Patrick Mouratoglou, where she basically flipped her whole team and he was kind of in control, brought in his people. But it stinks because she's going to end up being potentially the poster child of a conversation. It's like, okay, well, you know, this guy who comes in is great at self-promotion, right? He's his website. I went on it the other day and it's like 18 different photo shoots. It's like a prepackaged, you know, situation. I say it's like
when Puff are Daddy you doing jump- yours? When are yeah, you no. doing yours?
No, it's like Puff Daddy, who he used to like jump into every music video in the 90s. Yeah. Now that's like him in player boxes. But it's interesting because I kind of feel the same way. I'm not sure what the punishment is. And I understand the way that the rules are written. We are all responsible. But it also bothers me that, one, there wasn't an immediate I'm out front, not just a video, but I'll take your questions. If I would have been a part of giving someone something and them trusting me with it, I would have been out there trying to take as many bullets as possible for that person, right? Like saying, I did this. I gave it to her. It's my fault. I understand she's the only one that can pay the price because it's in her body and it potentially benefited her. But it is a weird thing. And I don't know how to digest it, you know, kind of the male female of it all, but it just seems like it's a tough situation when she's going to court on the same day that he's releasing top five lists on Twitter for servers.
I agree. It sits so wrong with me, and I'm trying to put myself in the situation of understanding, like, and I'm curious just for the future of like the WTA, the like everything, like, cause this can happen over and over again. We've seen it in the past where you have these coaches that come in and they take over the life of a player, and they want to be in control of everything and everybody that talks to the athlete. And yeah, it's definitely a huge red flag, and I feel really bad for Simona. But again, you know, we don't know the whole truth, but I hope that she gets her time. And I guess she was able to defend her case last week or something, and she's waiting for like the verdict.
Yeah,
to come
I feel
out,
like
or...
it's. I feel like we're in a long process of. I don't know if there's new information coming out, so I feel like we're almost stuck in the loop of getting a more sympathetic ear to deliver the same information.
There you go. Two former world number ones, Andy Roddick and Kim Clijsters, on Andy's new podcast. Served with Andy Roddick, weighing into the whole Simona Halep situation, which right now is waiting for the decision that she has appealed her 4-year ban, and she's awaiting on the verdict as far as that is concerned. An interesting comments there in regard to Patrick Mouratoglou, who we referenced earlier, is now back with Holger Rune for a third stint. Of course, he coached Serena Williams for a decade, a lot of success for Serena, and yes, it is certainly on the athlete of what you actually put into your body, but I think a fairly pertinent comment there from Kim Clijsters in particular, that the team here seem to be getting away with it, even though Patrick did say late last year, made an official statement that he took responsibility, but no real responsibility will fall on him long term. It's all in the hands of Simona Halep and what you actually physically put in your body. Brent Jones, I'm going to save your two-page little thing you sent me in regard to many things in tennis in the mailbag over the last week. I've run out of time, so I will save that for next week's show, where we're going to be in Indian Wells. So taking off tomorrow, we're going to catch a little bit of San Diego on the first serve. So make sure you check out our social accounts at WTA 500. Hopefully the Aussies can go nice and deep. And then Indian Wells, where else would you want to be? Tennis paradise. I promise you one day that we're going to take a tour group over to Indian Wells. Bit of tennis, bit of golf, the Californian desert. It is something else that is on my to-do list as long as I keep doing the first serve. So look forward to doing that. Thank you for your company tonight. Firstserve.com.au. Check out our socials. If you've missed our show, catch up on the podcast. I'll talk to you next Monday night at 8 o'clock.